Come voters, come gather round and hear the best disaster in town. Look at these fools, this ain't a bit. They're causing a mess and starting some shit. Seldom do you see such catastrophe. Oh, Kevin McCarthy, you will never be. Speaker of the House, didn't get the votes. Your party betrayed you while you tried to gloat. Santos isn't real, Boebert's making jokes.
And so now here we are, being sworn at instead of being sworn in.
MTG is out snorting lots of coke. Tedley brought a bag of popcorn. Jimmy Gomez wore his son. They've got me watching C-SPAN when I never thought that it'd be fun. Speaker of the House, who's it gonna be? All we know is that it won't be McCarthy. Losing all six votes, he should just resign. The threshold's gonna lower, so 212 will be fine. This is becoming a circus, a crazy reality show. They do what they please, it's Jesus, all these assholes gotta go.
The Left Show is not intended for youngsters. It's not intended for the sensitive. It's certainly not intended for right-wingers. Use your own discretion. Awful sweary.
The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
The world's greatest podcast network.
It's Monday in America, and you are listening to the world's greatest political podcast, J.M. Bell's The Left Show.
You know who the best-looking person sitting up there was? Who was it with the cowboy hat?
No, J.M. Bell.
J.M. Bell. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
He hosts a podcast.
Monday in America. You're listening to the world's greatest political podcast. And boy, what a waggy-ass show we got for you this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to open my drink for this one.
Yeah, you better.
Well, it's been a wacky-ass week, that's for sure.
Remind me when we get to the first break that I forgot to get water.
Oh, okay. Ugh.
Yuck water? Is that what you...
No.
Oh.
That's beer.
Oh, what is it?
It's just Coors Light, but for some reason it tastes off.
Because it's Coors Light.
It's Coors Light.
I drink Coors Light, you guys. I get it. But this one tastes a little off. Anyway.
I don't think you do. I don't think you do.
Lord knows I have never in my life enjoyed a Coors Light. For that matter, I've never enjoyed a Coors.
This is going to be like weird, but I preferred Coors Light before Utah upped the alcohol level and Coors Light started giving the normal alcohol level.
Oh.
I'm like, oh no, it doesn't taste like water.
Yeah, you like the sex in the canoe beer, yeah. Is what you're liking, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a good term. Good.
I just like
sex in a canoe, it's fucking close to water.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Are you...
What?
You know where that's from?
No.
Oh, that's a Monty Python bit.
Oh, I haven't watched that since I was a teenager.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. As long as you've watched it.
Monty Python, live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yep.
To be exact. The Australians come out and they say, yeah, we don't like American beer. It's like having sex in a canoe. It's fucking close to water. And to this day, it's like Utah beer. It's fucking close to water. It's beer. I've also called it beer adjacent.
I don't know. Okay, so if it's a mass marketed beer.
Right.
I like Negro Modelo a lot.
Okay.
I do like a Guinness.
You look like you'd like a Guinness.
Yeah. I really like Black and Tans.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's when it's half Guinness and half Harp.
Okay.
And
I definitely know what Harp is.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
It's a beer.
Okay.
And so it's a dark amber beer. And then you float it with the Guinness and they separate. So they're half and half.
Okay.
Is what they call it when they don't use the right ones. So it's either black and tan, which is Harp and Guinness, or it's a half and half, and then it's some beer and some dark.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, you get it in the thing and you just knock it back.
That sounds like a lot of work for me.
It's more of a bartender thing.
Okay.
You want to ask a bartender for it. But
you
I went back.
You have to pour your stout over a spoon. That's over the back of a spoon. And I have a spoon just to make black and tans.
Yep.
And I do enjoy doing it, but yeah, it is a lot of work.
What we did when I went to DC several years ago, we hit for some reason a 2-day thing where we hit 4 or 5 different Irish bars in the downtown area of Washington, D.C., and it was like I had cheesy potatoes of all different varieties, and I had black and tans, and I was as happy a beer drinker as has ever been. Now, I don't really drink beer anymore. I don't know why. I just kind of stopped. So I'll have a bourbon or a rye occasionally. I'll have some scotch from time to time, but for the most part, beer's something I get on accident or... You know,
how do I accidentally get a beer?
Oh, you end up at a party or something and you're just like, I'll grab a beer. And it's like, oh, this is a 20-year-old habit.
Yeah.
That I don't have anymore.
Huh.
You're at the FedEx and your good friend comes up to you and says, hey, I'm going to hit the beer table. You want a beer? Yeah, get me a beer.
I get you beers.
That's how I accidentally get beers.
Sorry.
It's not. No, it's a happy accident.
No, it's a very happy accident. Make no mistake.
I will keep doing it until I die.
Good.
One, I get to see my good friend Taylor.
Yes.
And two, she brings me back a beer. And it's awesome.
Hey.
The time I went where you and I, Taylor, got our picture taken with the DeLorean.
Yes.
We got Weiniger so drunk at Comic-Con, at FanX or whatever
the
fuck it's called. And he was just the friendliest, happiest, stupidest he has ever been.
Yeah.
Walking around with a big dumbass grin on his face and constantly going back to pay $10 for another fucking beer.
So expensive.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
See, he doesn't need therapy. He just needs more beer in his life.
Yeah.
More good beer.
I believe that's the opposite of the problem.
I think that's alcoholism, but like, man, do you.
If you're, just own it.
If you're happy at it.
I'm not going to interrupt people's hap time.
Yep.
No, not at all. So let's do, before we get started.
Oh, let's ruin everybody's happy time.
No.
Oh.
No. We're gonna increase the happy time.
Well, we're working on it. That's the point.
Yep.
So the new year brings changes to this, the world's greatest podcast network, the Defenestrate Media Network. Welcome to it. We're happy to have you. So for the most part, since the beginning, almost 12 years ago, we have had The Left Show, and immediately thereafter, the world's greatest comic book podcast, no matter what we called it, because we called it something else and it was wrong, and now we fixed it, and now it's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have, for the two shows and the bandwidth that we burn off, a balloon payment every January. Usually comes in about the middle of the month, and I get banged on all of our domains. Our hosting, our bandwidth, and when we do the fundraiser in January, one of the things we try and do is fix broken equipment. I am almost out of microphones.
Oh, no.
They're a decade old, you know, they're fucking old as fuck as far as microphones go. And so like that. So we've thrown a fundraiser together, the new year, new shows, that basically covers that. However, as a treat this year, we have 5 additional shows that we're going to add to the lineup here on the network. The first being, official recognition of the bastard child that is the Lane Ulrich Report. Does that make sense? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Because we've had him a couple of years now, but he's just sort of when he has time and can get somebody on the phone. But I think it's time to recognize it as an official member.
Official member of the group. He was very active in doing it for the first couple of years, and then COVID came along, and so he wasn't able to go to conventions, which is where he was usually getting his interviews.
Yeah.
Because he and our buddy Andy will go to all the different various convention, you know, comic book and science fiction conventions all over the Western states, and set up a booth and talk about their wares. But then you're usually sitting next to somebody all day long who's you know, working on their own book and everything. And
oh yeah,
he'll sit down and interview him. Yeah.
Anyway, it's really, really good. It drops mm-hmm. in the same feed as the World's Greatest Comic Book Podcast. Mm-hmm. It's his agoraphobia is still running strong, so he's doing everything on Zoom now, which mm-hmm. is great. But mm-hmm. we still get some amazing interviews with some deep, deep, deep cuts and information you can't get anywhere else. And that drops about every week-ish at this point, you know, mm-hmm. when we can get people on the phone. But we have four more shows that are going to be coming out this year. We're resurrecting two of them, one being Mansplaining, which is one of my favorite bits we've done over the years.
Love it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I believe at this point it's going to be a standalone all by itself, as opposed to being tacked to the end of this show, which is what we used to do with it, where it was, mm-hmm. you know, 4 or 5 minutes. I think we're going to do a little longer form on that one with historical context. And a fan favorite, I am told, Tell Me a Story, where I try and get people on the phone, and we have a story competition.
Story where, competition?
Yeah, it's fun. Like, you tell me a story, I try and top it.
Oh, this is ADHD, actually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so.
So that one has worked out well in the past, and I've had a lot of emails over the years of people asking me to bring both of those back. And then we've got two brand new shows coming out this year. The first one is I Told You So.
Yeah. My mom.
It's, you know, this one is me and Tiffany.
Oh, I love it.
We're going to be talking about relationships. We're going to cover all sorts of topics on the modern relationship that maybe people our age don't completely understand. It's going to be a research show. Our first few shows, we're going to cover polyamory. We're going to talk to some swingers. We're going to talk about pornography and talk to some porn stars and yes. stuff like that. And just kind of get a better grip on relationships in the modern world. So if you want to get prepared for that one, go watch So You Want a Sex Room on Netflix. Trust me.
Okay.
Wonderful show.
Okay.
I will watch it.
Yep. And then if we could pull it off, Sergeant Jake and I yes. are going to do a men's mental health show.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Every week or so, Jake or I text the other one where we hey, buddy, did you find a shrink yet? And he'll say, no, did you? And I'll say, no, I did not.
Oh.
And then we'll talk about how we feel. And I've decided that it's time to just fucking record it because it's usually hilarious.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do you want some sound bites for the mansplaining one where I'll just be like, okay, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Oh, great. That's interesting. I never knew that. But everything will be like, oh, I never knew that.
Do
yeah.
you remember
yeah,
mansplaining? Yeah.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I get mansplained a lot.
No, do you remember the show Mansplaining?
No.
It's basically Tiffany finds the heroic woman of the week.
Oh, I love that.
Throughout history. And then I do 5 to 10 minutes on who they are, where they came from, why they're important, and why it's important for men to recognize that women are better and smarter than us in every way.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's what that show's about.
It's a very important show.
I love it.
So the title's sort of ironic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The title is ironic.
So anyway, pop over to...
There does actually get to be some moments where we shame men for mansplaining.
Yeah. Eventually, I'll start a podcast when I figure out how to use the machine.
We'll get that
done. I brought it.
Because I've got space for you here on the flyer.
Good, because I brought it, and now I just have to figure that out.
Okay, we'll figure that out.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So anyway, I'm running a fundraiser. Again, a January fundraiser. If you go to theleftshow.com, it's right there on the top right. It says the 2023 network or annual network begathon. We're over there on GoFundMe again and can definitely use some help this year. More than years past. Mm-hmm. So if you can help us out, I'd appreciate it very, very much. Yeah. Well, now we have 8 minutes to do 4 stories.
Oh, okay. We could do it.
We can do it.
I mean, we could do it faster than Kevin McCarthy.
After 15 after 15 attempts, Kevin McCarthy finally got Matt Gaetz to roll over. My guess is that, you know, after 15 rounds, Matt Gaetz was finding everything a little old, and that's not to his taste.
That's not his taste.
Wah, wah.
I also
Go on.
I also think that, you know, giving away everything just so you can have the title Speaker of the House helped Matt Gaetz roll over.
He wants his portrait in the hall. He wants his bust on the pedestal. Fucker could quit now and he still gets him.
I am going to, anytime that, if I ever go there, I am going to bring a fake mustache and stick it on his portrait. I don't care if I get arrested.
Googly eyes.
It'll be hilarious.
Googly eyes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would stop me.
No,
I think they'd walk by and be like, nah.
No, at least he's not spray painting.
He made a deal with the devil.
All the devils.
By far.
All the devils.
But yeah, that was one of the things that that popped up. Is that in an interview on Fox News, Matt Gaetz was being grilled about what he did. And he's like, I've run out of things to ask for. Because everything he asked for was agreed to.
Yeah.
Everything Boebert asked for, it was agreed to. Everything Jim Jordan asked for, it was agreed to. And on and on and on. And so here we are with what will be the most powerless Speaker of the House in the history of our country.
Mm-hmm.
He won't be able to stop anything. He won't be able to pass anything. It is going to be, instead of a legislative body, it is going to be an investigative body, investigating bullshit, really loud, with lots of exclamation points. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are. I called this on my Substack several months ago and had no idea, no matter how doom and gloom that fucking write-up was, I had no idea it was going to get this bad. Yep. And it is bad.
It's pathetic.
So if
we're looking at 2 years of nothing getting done, and then you know these fuckers getting voted right back in because their constituency are fucking morons, as far as I can tell.
Boebert won't get back in.
I think Boebert's going to get reelected.
She won't get back in.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. She barely won.
Well, then
and
again,
he conceded.
Yeah, but I've watched state parties, especially in Utah, take a good candidate that's got a really good shot at taking that seat and fucking them over and sticking somebody else in there because they think there's a vulnerability and they can help a buddy out. So if the same dude runs against her next year, absolutely. Or in 2 years, I'm all for it. I think he's got a great shot.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, if they try and stick somebody else in there that has to start over and reintroduce themselves to voters, which is my fear, that's what's next.
They do like to do that, those people.
Democrats.
The egos.
We call them Democrats.
I know.
Yeah.
The egos.
Yep. Anyway, so yeah, there he is. But on the other hand, Joe Biden signed a bill to ease the cost of phone calls from prisoners to their family this week, which is insanely cool.
Yeah.
Because private prisons charge their prisoners a fucking fortune. Between what, $5 and $10 for a 5 minute call?
Yeah.
10 minute call? You know, and when they're making pennies an hour to do the work that they do in these private prisons, they don't get to make phone calls very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you committed a crime, you went to jail, everything else aside, you still should be able to say hello to your family from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially because if you're in a private prison, there's a pretty good chance you got moved far away from them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good chance of that.
So, yeah, the legislation makes good a campaign promise by Biden, who also recently signed into law a bill requiring the Federal Bureau of Prisons to overhaul outdated security systems, fix surveillance cameras. And earlier last year, he signed an executive order meant to improve accountability and policing. So, big bucket of win coming out of the Biden administration versus a big bucket of shit coming out of Kevin McCarthy's office. And then back to Republicans. A judge has suspended the law license of Alex Jones' attorney after the attorney released a shit ton of unauthorized files. Norm Pattis, Alex Jones' attorney, has lost his law license for 6 months.
That's it?
Yep.
No.
Fucker should have been disbarred. That's my
I mean, like, I don't think many people are going to hire him after this.
Yep. Judge Barbara Bellis said in a court decision released on Thursday that, simply put, given his experience, there is no acceptable excuse for his misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand,
honestly, she probably suspended his license just out of fear that Trump was going to retain him.
Yes. On the other hand, we have Hakeem Jeffries, who is impressing me over and over more and more. Every time he opens his mouth, I'm like, you know what? I'm really starting to dig this guy.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't know him all that well. I'm not quite sure who the hell he is or where the hell he came from, other than the fact that I've seen him do speeches before. And I really, really like him, you know?
Yeah.
But did I see him as speaker or as minority leader? No, it just hadn't occurred to me. I didn't know. I thought fucking Nancy Pelosi was going to live forever.
Yeah, she's done.
Yep.
She's done.
Seems to be. So
I get it.
He gave a lovely little speech. Part of which I every time I found a link to the video, it got taken down. So he says, House Democrats will always put American values over autocracy, benevolence over bigotry, the Constitution over the cult, democracy over demagogues, economic opportunity over extremism, freedom over fascism, governing over gaslighting, hopefulness over hatred, inclusion over isolation, justice over judicial overreach, knowledge over kangaroo courts, liberty over limitation, maturity over Mar-a-Lago, normalcy over negativity, opportunity over instruction, people over politics, quality of life issues over QAnon, reason over racism, substance over slander, triumph over tyranny, understanding over ugliness, voting rights over voting suppression, working families over the well-connected, xenial over xenophobia. I mean, they took a stretch for that one. That's
yeah, that was a little bit of a stretch.
Yes, we can over you can do it. And zealous representation over zero-sum confrontation.
Yeah, buddy. Well,
brilliant. And on time. When we get back from the break, we got more of the same.
Simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hey folks, Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, The World's Greatest Podcast, Comic Book Podcast, and of course...
The truck stop visits.
Yeah, the trucks. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and our exclusive content, you get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it. We should have a while ago.
Yeah. Apparently, if everything I saw wasn't just some sort of orchestrated dramatic bullshit, Gates and Boebert and like Jordan and some of the other Freedom Caucus members going to McCarthy over and over and over again to make him give more and more and more and more concessions, more and more subcommittee appointments and stuff like that. Marjorie Taylor Greene jumped on the Kevin bandwagon, the OKs, for a while, and then I got a video of her this week. I didn't pick for some reason, just being like, wait, they did what? They asked for what? I didn't ask for anything. I thought they were my friends.
The zero committee.
Jesus Christ!
I have like zero committees. It's like junior bitch. High. There's a reason.
Yeah, it's nuts. It is nuts as fuck.
I'm out of the friend group.
You should have got in on it, but you saw him as another gym instructor that you could fuck. So,
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Ew, I wonder if she's banging McCarthy. Ew.
I don't know.
I don't think he would lower his standards that
much. I don't know which half of that pairing is the ickiest.
Somebody asked on Twitter if everybody thought that Gates and Boebert were fucking, and I said, I think she's too old for him.
100%.
But she is the right height.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know. I'm hoping we get the opportunity to answer the question. If when he goes to prison, does he resign his seat?
Yes.
Well, will he?
He'll just vote from there.
No, you can't. Mm-hmm. You can't vote by proxy right now.
Oh.
Yeah, you have to be there to do it. Mm. Though, I don't know. We don't know yet if that was one of the concessions. We'll find out today, as it were. All right. Richmond, Virginia. A Virginia teacher who was critically injured when she was shot by a six-year-old student in Newport News is showing signs of improvement as authorities struggle to understand how a kid so young could be involved in a school shooting. Newport News Mayor Philip Jones said the condition of the teacher, a woman in her 30s, is trending in a positive direction as she remains hospitalized. Police Chief Steve Drew met with the teacher and her family Saturday morning. She's improved and is currently listed in stable condition. The boy shot and wounded the teacher with a handgun in a first grade classroom on Friday at an elementary school, according to authorities. Drew said the shooting was not accidental and was part of an altercation. Police on Saturday declined to describe what led to the altercation or any other details about what happened, citing ongoing investigation. Jones also declined to reveal details of the shooting or say how the boy got access to the gun in the first fucking place.
Parents.
His family.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
This is a red flag for the country, Jones said.
No, it's not.
I do think, no, it's...
It's pretty much business as usual.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, if it is a red flag, it just joins the other red flags that we've all forgotten are red flags and just think are some sort of weird-ass lawn ornament.
Yeah.
We just think they're pretty. Oh, look at all that pretty red. Oh, look at all those pretty red flags flying. Yep. That must be the new American flag.
Yep. Now, would you like to hear the most naive goddamn thing said by a government official all week?
I really love this. Yes.
Yes, please.
And I quote, I do think after this event, there's going to be a nationwide discussion on how these sorts of things can be prevented.
Mm. Okay.
Oh, you're adorable.
One door at the school, right?
Yep.
Yeah, one door at the school. You know, we're just going to have to run them through metal detectors as they come in. There'll be, or, you know, the teacher was just an actor.
And
it was all false. Yeah.
Yeah, she got shot and she just started yelling for her kids to run away. Mm-hmm. Like she's in horrible pain, bleeding out, and she just is like trying to get those other kids away.
Well,
yeah. Awesome. I guarantee you, we're going to see like a photo of this kid and his family, and it's going to be one of those Christmas photos where the whole family's posing with rifles and
100%.
Guns.
100%.
Yep. Yeah. Living out in the woods and double wide.
Yep. All of them in camo.
I don't want to read. See Jane run.
Or it's going to be one of those family photos where the husband like ties up the duct tapes the kids and wife and says, "Finally, some silent nights."
Jesus Christ!
There is an abundant amount of those.
Oh man!
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
That one caught me completely by surprise. That
is, when I saw it, I'm like, oh, okay. It hurt.
I'm sure there were like three or four of those on your in-laws' mantle at Christmas when you were up there. Look at the nice Christmas cards our cousin sent us.
George Santos has been under fire for a series of outlandish lies he's been caught telling in the wake of being elected to represent New York's 3rd Congressional District in the House of Representatives of the United States of America. Santos, 34 years old, is facing an internal investigation by the Republican Party for actions that incoming chairman, Rep. James Comer, deemed a disgrace. In addition to federal, state, and local authorities looking into potential criminal wrongdoing by Santos, the Long Island Republican is facing scrutiny for a lot of lies he's told. Among those lies is his claim that he attended Horace Mann Private School, something a school spokesperson said there's no evidence of. Santos also falsely claimed to have gone to Baruch College and New York University, a lie he has admitted to and claimed he's embarrassed about telling.
Not enough.
He also admitted to lying previously about working at banks Citigroup or Goldman Sachs. He claims to have worked for the banks through a third party that he has yet to provide proof of. Anyway, if those lies aren't enough, and there's more, I skipped
some. There's so many.
If those lies aren't enough, an old Instagram post is highlighting Santos' racist ties. A screenshot shared on Twitter shows one of Santos' Instagram posts from 2014, where he posted a meme that made Barack and Michelle Obama appear as apes.
Well, the motherfucker, as he got sworn in, had his right hand up and his left hand making the white pride symbol that also is asshole in sign language.
In ASL,
Guess what, guys? I bet him and Marjorie are going to be best buddies because nobody likes them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there is a question as to whether or not his gay bona fides are for real. You know, what with having a wife until 10 minutes before he ran for office.
Yeah, and his mom died twice, I heard, so.
Yep. She died in 9/11, and then she died a few years later.
Yep.
And he's Jewish, apparently.
He also says that he's Caucasian and black.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, you know, I can figure out which half of that was given the white pride symbol.
Yeah.
Well, the white pride symbol, I'm like, you know, that's just, I'm sorry, that's just signaling to a terrorist group. That's all it is to me.
Yeah.
That's a call for insurrection right there.
14th Amendment, Section 3, as I've been saying this whole show.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Well, it's okay. I can lie. I'm not running for fucking Congress.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Doesn't he know that you don't have to lie to get into Congress? Like, no, look at these fucking dumbasses in it.
You're not supposed to lie to get in. You lie once you're there.
Yeah. What an idiot.
He is an idiot. I'll give you that. I just want to know where he got the money. He went from making $55,000 a year to filing paperwork that says he's worth between $2 and $11 million. He lent his campaign $700,000, and there's rumors that he's got ties to weird money, and that that's where it came from. I mean, these are other things that hopefully the FEC will look into. Because I've told you guys, I've told you the story where I was running a candidate clear the fuck back in the early 2000s, in 2004. He was a police officer. He's a police captain. And we were wondering as to whether or not we were committing a Hatch Act violation by running him because certain departments inside his police department received federal funding. What he did in the job that he performed was not paid for federally. It was paid for by the city. And so we threw out the facts. We sent a letter to the FEC. Didn't hear anything back. So we just went on with the campaign until we got to the end and lost because he's a Democrat in Utah at the time. Flash forward 2.5 years. I get a letter at my house saying, don't worry about it. It's not a Hatch Act violation. It's not.
Yep. Yeah.
That one cracked me the fuck up. I'm like, you've got to be shitting me. And I called him up. I'm like, guess what I just got? I just got our FEC filing back. You're fine to run for Congress 3 years ago. So way to go.
When it comes to investigating his income, because basically he always had the money, he was just reporting that he only made $55,000 a year to the IRS.
We can do that.
You're not supposed to.
If your name's Trump,
they've basically this same Congress. One of the things they've promised is they want to get rid of all the IRS jobs that Biden is trying to push up. They want to defund it so he can't put those IRS agents in there because they don't want to be investigated.
Fuck the middle class.
They would be the first to be investigated by the IRS. It would be people like fucking Santos.
Yeah.
Ron DeSantos. Now his plans
the other Santos, the DeSantis.
Yeah, the DeSantis. has plans to do a takeover of the Disney board of directors.
Of course.
What he's trying to pull off is an appalling power grab. He ratcheted up his year-long fight with Walt Disney Co. With a plan Friday to take control of the governing board for its sprawling Central Florida property and make the company assume $700 million in outstanding debt. Public notice was posted in Osceola County that a bill would be introduced during the upcoming legislative session making major changes to the district. It's not heavy in details yet, but Governor DeSantis' staff told Fox News that the legislation would give the district control to a state-controlled board appointed by the governor. The proposed legislation, though, would put the bond debt on the company, shielding the taxpayers of Orange and Osceola counties, where the 38.5 square mile Reedy Creek district is located. So here's a company that brings billions of dollars into the state every year. And because they're nice to gay people, DeSantis would like to destroy the board that runs the Reedy Creek district.
Because, you know, you cannot be the absolute governor of Florida as long as there's a corporate sovereign nation sitting in the middle of your state, basically, is how he sees it.
Yeah.
They should just leave. I know that's, like, really not an option, but they should just phase out.
They should just move to another state.
Yeah.
One thing at a time until there's nothing left but empty rides. Yeah. Then sell it to Florida to... But they can't use the word Disneyland or Epcot, you know?
This is the new lagoon.
Five flags over Florida. They can't afford
Five red flags.
They're
all red flags, too.
Finally.
Yeah.
Red flags. Well played. I just don't understand... I mean, he's a Republican. He's supposed to like money. The Disney pays a shit ton of taxes into the state every year, which pays your paycheck, Ron fucking DeSantis.
They're too woke.
They're too woke.
This is where woke comes to die. Okay, whatever.
Systematic racism.
It really is. My favorite headline of the week.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga tried to investigate January 6th herself. Quote, I looked for evidence, end quote.
All I could think of is like her with a magnifying glass with white gloves on.
Yeah.
Just dusting with a tiny little duster.
And one of those little double-billed hats made of meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lady Gaga visited the U.S. Capitol days after the January 6th riot seeking evidence of the truth. She revealed in an interview that has resurfaced on the anniversary of the attack. The violent mob, Donald Trump supporters, stormed the building in Washington, D.C. in an attempt to stop Congress from certifying the results of the 2020 election and the victory of President Joe Biden. The singer and actress visited the site ahead of performing the national anthem at Biden's inauguration on the 20th and took the opportunity to launch a small investigation of her own. During an interview with Bernice King on the web series Beloved Community Talks, The Power of Unlearning, Lady Gaga discussed her experience at the Capitol, saying she saw the white rage as she looked at a broken window. I mean, I saw that too. I did it while watching TV.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing on TV. I didn't have to look at a broken window.
Yep. The hour-long interview originally aired June of 2021 and has resurfaced on the one-year anniversary this week, or the riot's one-year anniversary this week. Gaga told King, the day before the inauguration, I went to see where I was going to be standing. I walked in a bulletproof vest on because we were nervous about being at the Capitol. Someone said to me, would you like to see the Capitol today? And I said, no, because I wanted to get in and get out. And then I went in and I saw where I was going to stand and sing, and I was finished with the walkthrough of the show. But I was leaving, I stopped myself and I said, why did you say no? That you didn't want to see the Capitol then? It was because I didn't want to see the place where the insurrection had taken place. I went back to that woman and that asked me, and I said, my apologies, I'd like to see the Capitol. I walked through the Capitol like a detective.
Oh my God.
I looked for evidence of the truth, because we see these things on screen. We witness these things on the news, but there in person, I was afraid.
I mean, I definitely saw it happening live.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I watched it live. I remember that fucker hanging off the arch, kicking at the cops, trying to hold back the crowd. I remember that. Oh,
yeah.
I still want to. I hope he was in Gen Pop somewhere. Yeah.
All right. We are going to take another break. And when we get back on the other side, you know what? It's going to be a little lighter fare. We're going to do some science news.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Oh.
We'll be right back. my pain into purpose is pretty much what I have done to start this foundation.
In August 2020, after the death of George Floyd, Bridget Floyd and other family members established the George Floyd Memorial Foundation in support of the Black community.
It's going to take more than just us as a foundation. It's going to take the community, the world, to make a change.
Fight for racial justice for the Black community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
This week on the world's greatest comic book podcast, we remember Walter Cunningham, Earl Bowen, and Jeremiah Green. Jeremy Renner celebrated his 52nd birthday in the hospital.
But not dead.
But not dead.
Noah Schnapp came out in moving pictures. Wednesday has been renewed. Fighting monsters is a lucrative business. It's worth $7 million, apparently. At comics, a new Green Arrow series will feature Peacemaker.
I wonder if Eagly.
Yes, Eagly!
Marvel has announced a new She-Hulk anniversary. 1/6 Comics has a terrifying story for us.
I really like horror comics, but this one might be too much.
Yeah, pick up Crossed instead.
Yeah, much better.
Less disturbing.
Sodomy, way better.
We review Mosley, Scarlet Witch, Spider-Man, Dark Ride, and Midnight Suns. All this and don't validate Ryan Reynolds. Face front, true believers, it's the world's greatest comic book podcast. Available Tuesdays on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and the comic book podcast.com.
There really is something to be said for making something creepier than Garth Ennis could ever, ever imagine.
Ever dream of, yeah.
For some reason, you are still listening to The Left Show. All right, then. Here's some more of that, I suppose.
The federal government has granted a conditional license for a honeybee vaccine. The developer of the drug announced on Wednesday. No, this is not a vaccine about bees or because of bees or...
Not a vaccine for those allergic to bee stings.
No, this is a vaccine for the actual bees. The vaccine will be used to help fight the American Foul Brood, which I think was a group that the X-Men fought.
Yes.
Foul Brood disease in the insects was approached by the Department of Agriculture, Dalen Animal Hospital, the biotech company behind the vaccine. Quote, "This is an exciting step forward for beekeepers as we rely on antibiotic treatments that has limited effectiveness and requires lots of time and energy to apply to our hives." This is from Towser Apiaries, board member of the California State Beekeepers Association, from a news release. If we can prevent an infection in our hives, we can avoid costly treatments and focus our energy on other important elements of keeping our bees healthy. Infected bees and hives are also typically incinerated to stop the spread of the disease. The disease is caused by a Penibacillus larvae, a type of bacteria that affects the bee's larvae. The vaccine contains some of that bacteria and it'll be mixed in with the royal jelly, which worker bees secrete from their heads and then feed to the queen and the larvae. When the queen eats the jelly, she'll ingest the fragments of the vaccine that will grant her offspring some immunity against the bacteria. The vaccine is not genetically modified and can be used in organic agriculture. Woohoo!
That's good.
Yeah, if Dan's listening, we totally get it. It's fine. It's fine. I don't have a problem with genetically modified foods anymore. I don't. I still think organic tomatoes taste better than any other kind of farm-grown tomato.
One time I heard that organic is defined by the person that's growing it.
Oh, I don't know. No, I think there's rules. I mean, I'm organic. But am I?
I'm not.
No?
I am modified by medication.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, so am I. Never mind.
You don't want to see me organic.
Never mind. I'm a GMO, too.
Yep.
I think that's our next Left Show t-shirt. I am GMO. You wouldn't like me when I'm not. Anyway, this is pretty good news as we strive to save the bees.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the happening very, very and important. All that movie really spiced things up.
The first planet found by the Kepler space telescope is doomed.
it's killing itself because we found it.
It probably. It's like, oh God,
it's
no.
It's like, nope.
I don't need that kind of an infection. Kepler launched in 2009 on a mission to find exoplanets by watching them cross in front of their stars. First potential planet on the telescope was spotted initially dismissed as a false alarm, but in 2019, astronomer Ashley Chantos and colleagues proved it was real. The planet was officially named Kepler 1658b.
Ooh. Wow, is that foreign?
That really gives you tickles, doesn't it?
I
think it's in Swahili. But now Chantos and others have determined the Kepler 1658b's fate. Quote, it is tragically spiraling into its host star. The planet has roughly 2.5 million years before it faces a fiery death. It will ultimately end up being engulfed. Death by star.
Damn, that's a good band name.
I don't know if you knew this or not. None of us will be here to see it.
I'm going to be so upset. They haven't found a way to keep me alive for 2.5 million years.
I want to watch.
Science is stupid.
I want to watch the planet get et. That's all.
This planet will be gone before then.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good point.
not by its own sun, but just by the people living on it.
I had a little daydream. I was working out a story problem for myself the other day. And basically, it's a game I play in my head that I'm not at all proud of. But basically, it's like you get the genie, you get the three wishes. What are your three wishes? What's the best way to phrase them so that they turn out good and not bad? It's yada, 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 yada. Mm-hmm. And fair. Any thought of immortality has to be linked with the fact that we're going to destroy the habitability of this planet in the next 100 years. And I got nowhere to go. And wouldn't you hate to be the last human because you made a stupid wish to a djinn?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to live forever.
That sounds awful.
Oh, God. Earth is awful.
Sounds so awful.
Yeah. And all the smart scientist types are dead. So I can't even build a spaceship to get the fuck out of here.
Mm.
Go live on the lunar colonies that we can't have because fucking Republicans ruin the space industry.
Ugh.
Yep. Brought that around. For more on that, mm-hmm. listen to the world's greatest comic book podcast tomorrow at thecomicbookpodcast.com. Yeah, I'm all over the place today. I cannot keep on topic. But I've tried.
I don't understand the will to live in an apocalypse. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I don't understand the will to live. If there's an apocalypse,
you can hunt the greatest game.
That's the purge.
Man.
They already do that.
Yeah, but once the apocalypse comes, you know.
It's not worth it.
Look, all I know is in my old neighborhood, almost every house has food storage in the basement.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. I need food. I have weapons. So I will go and take the food.
Yeah, that's you fighting for your life, man. I'm just saying, I don't wanna.
Okay.
I'm done.
That'd be fun for a little while.
Yeah, I'm good.
You know, little Rick Grimes. Rick Grimes me. Put together a ragtag group of misfits and hunt cannibals and zombies.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Looking for a nice, quiet place to settle.
This month, Skygazers will be treated to a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-civilization, I should say, sight. A green comet named C-2022E3, parentheses, ZTF, end parentheses, approaching Earth. The way they name things these days is so creative.
I was gonna say, they can't just name it Charlie 2022.
Or Kermit?
Or ZTF is fine.
It's a green comet.
Comet.
Hulk? Banner? Kermit? What was his little nephew's
Oscar
name?
Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar?
Robin?
Robin? Yep.
There's just...
They could have picked a fucking name.
That's just.
I would like to call it Comet Hal for Hal Jordan.
Oh, there you go.
That's a good one. That's yeah.
The comet last passed through our solar system a little more than 50,000 years ago. It'll reach its closest point to the sun on January 12th, where it'll be within 100 million miles of the sun. On February 2nd, the comet will only be about 26 million miles from Earth. This is the closest it has passed since the upper Paleolithic era, an epoch of human history when Homo sapiens are believed to have left Ithaca and settled in Asia and Europe. To put it in perspective, Neanderthals still walked the Earth the last time this big green rock floated by our planet.
Mm-hmm.
I got a rock.
But I don't know. It's a green fucking comet. I mean, that's pretty cool. So yeah. You'll apparently be able to see it. There's a map.
Well,
NASA always live streams that kind of shit on TikTok. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably watch it on TikTok as they live stream it.
Okay, because it'll probably be cloudy the day it pops over.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just like
I'll watch it after they live stream it, because they said in the Northern Hemisphere it'll be in the morning, which usually is about 4 a.m.
Yeah, I did that with the last one, the Red Moon? Or what was it last month? I woke up at 3 to watch it on NASA's TikTok.
Mm.
It's pretty cool. That's all.
From last month, I pulled this article. But basically, humans haven't set foot on the moon in 50 years.
And because it was fake.
That's okay.
I'm just kidding. Buddy. Sorry. I'm just kidding, though, guys. I was just joking.
Project Apollo ended this week. The last moonman returned to Earth and splashed down on a target in the Pacific on December 19th. All of the surface and orbital instruments appear to be working, with the exception of the surface gravimeter. The geology investigation team summed it up this way. Apollo 17 will be remembered as the most scientifically sophisticated, not as the last, manned lunar landing. Oopsie daisy. The Apollo missions continue to add to our knowledge of the moon and Earth. Scientists have used lunar soil samples collected by Apollo astronauts to show that growing plants on the moon, while challenging, may actually be possible. In May, NASA researchers began scrutinizing untouched lunar rock and soil samples from the Apollo 17 missions for hints of past moon conditions and the chemicals crucial for life. Then this last November, a new era of moon missions dawned with the launch of the NASA Artemis 1 mission. NASA hopes to land humans on the moon in 2025 to pick up where Apollo 17 astronauts left off over 50 years ago. That'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, that fucking program has to last through 2 years of Republicans running the budget.
I love it.
Well, it's 2 years of Republicans just, you know,
lowering age limits to have sex with.
Yeah. And conducting investigations. Yes.
Yep. All right. That's it for the show. I think there may be an interview that pops up in a minute. Joining me on the show for this particular portion, friend of mine, Drew Armstrong, co-founder of Dragon Dads, which is an organization I'm going to let him explain, but that has actually something that delivered peace of mind in a way to me. So hi, Drew. Thanks for hanging out today.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. I've been wanting to do this for quite a while. So tell folks about Dragon Dads, sort of where it came from, what it does, what its, you know, its purpose, stuff like that.
So probably about 8 years ago, I was walking in Pride with several friends. I think that year we were walking with Mormons Building Bridges or something, because we were all sort of affiliated at that point. And we are probably five dads that all have LGBT kids. And our wives had signed up, and actually some of them had founded Mama Dragons. And not my wife. My wife was kind of quiet about that. But we kind of turned to each other and we all were like, yeah, I tried to join Mama Dragons and they won't let us in because they're sexist. which we enjoy saying, because, you know, it's funny to have sexist women's groups. That, anyhow, they wouldn't let us join. And so we're like, you know, we ought to do something. And we did. We put together Dragon Dads. And Dragon Dads is, I mean, we're just approaching 1,600 fathers now. And so the qualification is you need to be an affirming father of an LGBT kid. You don't need to know how to use your pronouns right. You can even be a little irritated that your kid wants to get rid of the name that you so carefully thought of and came up with over, you know, many months while they were in, you know, being built. But you can be frustrated with some of that. You can be struggling with your teenagers because teenagers are a pain in the ass. And we all know that.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to be an affirming father of an LGBT kid to join. And we're pretty careful about that. And we've got some trans dads. We've got some gay dads. And we've got a whole bunch of straight dads. We started in Utah in Arizona, and there were a lot of Mormon dads to begin with. But at this point, I think the LDS dads are a minority in the group, probably 20%.
Yeah.
And we've got a ton of dads that are lots of them that are post-Mormon. And then we've got a whole bunch of them that are other religions and everything else. We've got a lot of Jewish dads, and we've got a lot of dads that are United Methodist.
True.
Their church just split in half because of the LGBT issue.
Yeah.
So and we've got a lot of dads from areas that are very supportive of the LGBT cause, but we also have a lot of dads that are from like the South and places where rural areas where they don't have a lot of support, and they can find that within our group. You know, the dads come in and ask interesting questions like, how do you do a sleepover now that I found out my kid's gay? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so,
cause we,
that's what it is.
When I have two LGBT kids, and when my youngest came out, basically life turned into a 24/7 panic attack. Didn't know where to go, didn't know what to do, didn't know who to talk to. The main concern right there at the beginning was his mental health. Is he okay? He's got, you know, dysphoria. He's got, severe depression. He's got being bullied. He's got all these different problems. And so we as his parents, while we don't get along, we love the kid. And so we did everything we could for him. We got him out to the Pride Center. And they used to have a really good program for, both gay kids and transgender kids. And so for the first couple of years, it was a mad scramble to make sure he was going to be okay. And it was a lot of work and a lot of stress and a lot of fear. And then once everything started to streamline, not that problems go away, but they do minimize, you know, his journey is certainly not finished, but I found myself having no support system other than my soon to be ex-wife in talking about the emotional density of what we had just gone through for the last few years as well. And so I, for the life of me, it had to be from you because we've known each other on Facebook forever. But you know, I joined and immediately was able to start helping dads with questions, which answered questions I didn't know that I had. And there is, I'd say 95% of the time, there is a wonderful support system for the dads, you know, and I'm not jumping on a men's rights bandwagon or anything, but it's easy and societally stagnant enough that we do get set aside and people don't check in on dads to make sure we're okay too. Because I've been afraid a few times in my life, but never a sustained 3-year terror that I was going to lose my kid at any minute. And, you know, frankly, pardon my French, it fucked me up. And working with other dads in the group and even just lurking and reading is a lot of help seeing, okay, other people are going through this too. They're going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. And so that's where, I mean, that's, I think it's been maybe 3 years I've been a member. It feels about right.
Yeah, probably about that. Yeah.
And so I, of course, saying thank you, it was nice to have somewhere to go. And was a delight to find that there was somewhere to go. Because it is about the kids, but you can't be there for your kid if you're a train wreck.
That's true. And a lot of times it's just the stress of like, nobody's ever done this before aside from me kind of thing. Because a lot of times the truth is that even sometimes when you find out that somebody else is going through it, it's not something you talk about with the guys, you know, it's like, oh yeah, my kid just came out as gay. And, I mean, we don't do that at work. We don't do that at home. We don't do that with our buddies. Usually.
Yeah.
You know, you might if you're in a private situation or whatever, but it's like, you know, they have a hard time empathizing with us to begin with, because it's something that really draws out some fear and emotions and concern, and it's really personal. But and then you're like, well, I don't know how much I want to say, because I'm not we haven't had a discussion about what's okay to talk about.
Oh yeah.
About our kids' life and everything with these buddies either. And so, I mean, we are pretty careful with Dragon Dads to say, hey, look, you know, anything that's discussed in here is, you know, that's private. And because they need to be safe, and we're careful. We're careful who we let in because of that. So, but we also around here and we're starting in some other places across the country where we have enough density that there are some things where we have some activities that we do for the kids. We provided the security for the Pride Center's LGBT prom this past year.
Yep.
We won the award for the best social group in the Pride Parade in Salt Lake City. So yeah, did you come do that with us?
No, I had to work
this year.
I'm going to try. It seems like all the cool shit we do. I know there's a dad's breakfast on Sunday mornings, which is right Saturday. When I start I start work.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's awesome. That's super fun.
Yeah. I've desperately wanted to go, and I'm going to pull it off one of these days.
Yeah. It's fun. It's fun. We end up sitting and shooting the shit for a long time. You know, we generally get out of there, you know, it starts at 9 and we get out of there, at, you know, noon.
Yeah. Yeah.
but it's fun to talk to the guys. So, one of the other things that, and the reason that I kind of mentioned that I wanted to come on here and talk to you, and talk to everybody about this, is because one of the other things that we've found a place for us that we can make a unique difference is by using our hetero, white, cisgender, male privilege to advocate for our kids. And I'm a real estate broker. And if there's anything that real estate brokers have learned by doing this for a long time in Utah, it's how to deal with the legislature, right? You know, everybody always complains that there's too many developers and real estate brokers up at the legislature. Well, yeah, but now, so what I've been trying to work on is helping the dads to become better citizen lobbyists and go up and deal with some of the crap that we're dealing with at the legislative level. We've had everything, and we've been very successful over the past probably 8 to 10 years with LGBT related issues. And this past year was the first time we actually got one stuffed down our throats with the transgender, you know, sports ban.
Right.
And we lost that, and we'll keep working on trying to get it to go through. But we've got some legislation in place that's anti-discrimination legislation. We got, you know, hate crimes legislation, only red state in the country with good hate crimes legislation. That's actually been tested and it's worked.
Yep.
And so that's unfortunately, it's been tested, but it has, and it actually worked. So that's good. And then we have this year, for the third or fourth year in a row, we've got a bill that is a couple of bills. We've got one that's originating in the House.
Right.
And one that's a little different that looks like it's going to be a two-part bill that is originating in the Senate in Utah. But both of them, to one degree or another, are taking away the ability for parents and the doctors to make the determination as to whether or not health care, and it depends on which bill to what degree they're saying
sure,
no.
Sure.
But the one that's coming from the House is a preclusion of all treatment for any transgender youth under 18. No hormone therapy, no surgery, and nothing at all.
Yeah, I think, all of it is onerous, and I don't care for it, but I think that the most important one, and this is completely anecdotal, but is the hormone blockers that the kids get, you know, to slow down the puberty process. And yep. and that was, as I recall with my kid, one of the three most important things that happened. And the first was is finding a group of kids for them to hang out with the Pride Center. And then it mm-hmm. was making sure we got that hormone blocker put in, which then mm-hmm. calmed a lot of the dysphoria and made the depression more manageable. Yep. and it was a huge, huge step. And I just remember the feel of some relief after we got that first shot. And even though it was prohibitively expensive and it was damnably hard to get a hold of, once we got him that first shot, he felt better. His mood improved. We felt better because we knew we had made a very significant step that should have been more obvious. But again, we didn't know at the time what the hell we were doing.
The thing that's so nice about the hormone blockers, and for those of you who are listening, understand that, I mean, my child at this point, I was a Mormon dad.
Yep.
I had a 3-year-old that came out. Okay. 3 years old. And they came out. Now, there's nothing that you do besides maybe nail polish or a haircut or and using different names or pronouns for a kid that is prepubescent. There's no surgery. There's no surgical intervention, nothing like that. So don't presume that there is. Nobody is treating kids that are prepubescent with anything that physically alters them. Okay.
Right.
That doesn't exist. People try to say, oh yeah, they're doing genital surgery on prepubescent. No, not at all. Nobody ever does that anywhere. So my kid came out, and then we spent the next 8 years, A, educating ourselves, and B, trying to talk him into pink stuff. Right.
Oh, sure.
Cause we didn't know any better. And eventually my wife actually divorced me over this because she'd read A Miracle of Forgiveness and realized that God's mouthpiece said that the three ways that you end up LGBT are too much porn, too much masturbation, or sexual abuse. And it wasn't porn or masturbation because they are five at this point in time. And you can't hide that from mommy. So it's got to be sexual abuse, and nobody else had access except me and her. So it must be me because it wasn't her. Right. So we ended up divorced over this, but, my son actually came out again, when he actually said, hey dad, do you know what transgender is? And I said, yeah. And he says, well, I think that might be me. And he was 11 at the time. And so the first thing we did is when he was 12, you start blockers. And what blockers for a parent, what that does is that gives you a little time to make sure that you're doing the right thing and that what you're doing is safe for your kid and it's the right thing for your kid. And this isn't some fly by night, like, oh, well, you know, maybe I'm trans. I mean, you know, you make sure that they really are. Then when he was 15, I don't know how it went for you, but for us, when he was 15, we started on cross-sex hormones. And when he was 17, he got his top surgery. But what is important for people to understand is that when I was looking into this, and it's gotten better since then, but there was very little information that was available back when I'm looking into this. That was like in 2010, 2011 kind of thing. But I'm finding what I think is good medical research that is telling me that like 30-40% of the people that take blockers end up dying from cancer. And I'm like, oh shit, you know, these are not safe.
Right.
Yeah. But what I find out later is that this group that's disguising themselves as medical, like a medical group, is not a medical group. They're a bunch of Catholic doctors and PAs, and some of them work in a doctor's office. They're not even like a trained medical person. Are twisting the information. And what blockers, hormone blockers, are generally prescribed for, the real thing that they're prescribed for more than anything else, is prostate cancer in men, or yep, certain cancers in women that have to do with your genital tract or your hormones and genital tract. And so it's like, well, yeah, they're giving blockers to people with stage 3, 4, and 5 cancer. And yeah, some of them die. They don't make it. And it's like, well, yeah, but what does that have to do with my kid? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. He's not going to die from cancer because he's taking blockers.
Yep.
There are some side effects that can show up in rare cases, but they're not that prevalent. And what we are concerned about, when you have a kid that's suffering from severe dysphoria, why are you giving them blockers, or why are you giving them surgery or anything? Well, you're treating a something by physically changing how their body is manifesting. You're changing what we're worried about is what's going on in their head.
Yeah.
Not what's going on with their body, but their the changes in their body where, I mean, you know, imagine you, if all of a sudden you started physically turning into a woman, that's uncomfortable. You wouldn't become, you're going, oh my gosh, what's my future going to hold? How's the world going to accept me as this? And, you know, I'm menstruating now, you know, I mean, that's a huge problem.
Sure.
When you've got a boy in his head and he's dealing with boobs and menstruation, that, you know, that they don't, that's not cool. And it's the suicidality that's caused by the gender dysphoria that is the reason that blockers and hormone therapy and everything is important, and eventually surgery. It's because the medical community does not have a better solution for us. If there was a pill,
yeah,
most kids would take it. They'd said, okay, you know, all this dysphoria is going to go away if you just take this magic dysphoria pill. Then you don't have to, probably half of them would never transition at all. So, because they'd just be like, okay, I'm okay with it. It's not stressing me out that way. And so this is not a new treatment. It's been going on. This has been the normal standard of practice since about 2000. And it was something that they had worked on and experimented with all the way since probably the 80s. But then by 2000, they said, okay, this is working. This is the best thing that we can provide for trans people, is this alleviates a lot of the dysphoria. It doesn't alleviate at all. A lot of times people are like, oh, well, they're still suicidal, yeah, after surgery or after this stuff. Like, of course they are, but they're less so if you can treat them with blockers or cross-sex hormones or surgery or whatever. And more than that, for parents, it's a way to protect your kid. My son is he started so early, and you tell us about yours, my son, most of his friends don't know that he's trans.
Ah.
They have no idea. So, you know, one of his favorite things to do is he likes to go do tactical airsoft. He also likes to race cars. Those buddies, I mean, he's going camping with these guys. They have no idea he's trans. He gets to live a normal life of a normal guy because he passes so well, because we started this stuff early enough that he doesn't get picked on. And if you go through puberty and you're a trans woman and your hands turn out like a, you know, big man hands, and your face, yeah, your face turns into a man's face, and you got broad shoulders and narrow hips, you've got a problem passing as a woman for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up, I mean, we'd all, in the ideal situation, yeah, it'd be great if our kids could wait until they were adults. That'd be great. But that is a world that doesn't exist, because puberty comes along when they're 11 or 12, and it does its damage. And, it, you know, I've seen trans women. I've got lots of trans women that are friends, and they've done $100,000 worth of surgery, gone through all this pain and suffering. Whereas if they had the privilege and parents that understood to keep them from going through male puberty.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be a different life for them, for sure.
Yeah. I just remember those blockers being not the end of the suicide fear, but the beginning of it being something we could talk about and manage without frankly hysterics, you know. Yeah. And there were severe missteps at first. I mean, I said some pretty dumb stuff.
You didn't take the you might get a transgender kid parenting class.
Yeah, the nurse when we had the kid didn't put that in the pamphlet stack. Yes. You know, and that's all. And it was just, I mean, it was just dipshit ignorant stuff. It wasn't, you know, at no point was I hostile about it. But, you know, right. it was opening your mouth, and I screwed up my pronouns for a good 4 or 5 months. And you know, it was talking to, here in Salt Lake, we used Dr. Lukanar.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. And
she is.
She just
fantastic.
Walked us through it.
And we shouldn't say she. Because she's a they, them now.
Oh, so. I did not know. We haven't seen them in quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to, right? You know, once you get this all managed and under control, then it's like, you know, kid goes in for a follow-up visit once a year, if that. And that's all you need to worry about.
Yep.
So not that big a deal. But yeah, Rick's just fantastic.
So let's really spend a minute talking about... I mean, so we seem to have weathered a storm last year, and then we got a special session that just took everything back.
Yep.
You know, and made some bad decisions that, frankly, pick on in a monstrous way, roughly, specifically 4 children in Utah, but then peripherally every other trans kid in Utah gets to feel the full brunt of what is basically the right-wing messaging on them telling my kid that my kid is fucked up, weird, perverted, and wrong. And it's frustrating. So now, is it only the 2 bills, one from the top, one from downstairs this year, or do we know, are there more lurking?
No, that's it. So the House bill is coming from the same guy that's run it. What's his name now? It's slipping my mind. He's a House rep that is, and I've met with him.
Yeah.
And he's from Cedar City, and I'll remember when I'm not thinking about it in just a second what he is. But Chip is.
Oh yeah,
is
yeah, yeah.
Doing it, and he's tried to run the same bill for the last 3 years. And it is none of anything. Like we're going to shut it all down. From the other end, we've got the guy, and he's actually my doctor. And he wasn't my kid's doctor, and I'm a little mad at him. But at the same time, I think that in his mind, he is trying to help. And so what is doing is instead of saying, okay, no blockers and no hormone therapy, nothing, just you got to wait till you're 18 to have surgery is what he's saying. He came and in October, there was a hearing with the Health and Human Services Committee meeting that I went to where he came and what he tried to do is he's like, well, if we can just get everybody on board here, then they can end run the public debate on the bill.
Yeah.
And they can roll it through. And it didn't go through again. That didn't work for him. But what he's trying to do is I think he actually has kind of two bills. And the first one, when he presented it there, he didn't present it this way. The first bill, he's saying, okay, no genital tract surgery. And so that one, if they just said no genital tract surgery for minors, that means bottom surgery, right?
Right.
Not a vasectomy for trans guys. It's just, you know, genital tract surgery. And most trans guys never, ever get bottom surgery. Some do, but phalloplasties, you know, bottom surgery for biological born female people, humans, doesn't work that well.
Right.
It can. It's getting a lot better, but it's not great. A bottom surgery for women for trans women is much more common and works a lot better. They actually have this figured out to the point where if you get a good surgeon, you can actually make a vagina that works, you know, and functions pretty well. That's not true. I met one dad when I was looking hard for anybody is like, has anyone had any kind of surgery beyond top surgery who's under 18? And I found somebody that had an orchiectomy at 17, which is something that normally trans women need to have because the level of hormones that they have to take.
Yeah.
In order to overpower the testosterone is strong enough that it can actually, just like, you know, there's a cancer risk for birth control. Eventually that much estrogen could create a problem where there's a severe cancer risk. And so you got to shut off the testosterone manufacturing. So I found one person and it was not done by a doctor that is normally treating trans people. So, right. That's a real anomalous situation. Now, top surgery for trans guys, that's common, but there's a standard of practice that's in place where you've got to, and tell me if your experience was similar, but you have to have lived as a trans person for at least 2 years.
Yep. Yep.
Before your surgeon will do it. Then you have to have, we had to have two letters. So we had to have a letter from our counselor, like a counseling professional or a psychologist, and that said, yep, this is the right thing. This is the best course of action and best treatment for this person to help with the dysphoria. And then they had to have another letter from the doctor who provided the endocrine treatment for orso blockers or cross sex hormones.
Yep.
So we had those two, or they would not do the surgery. And so if anybody is thinking that somebody is approaching this willy nilly and it's like, oh yeah, your kid comes and says that they're trans and you're like, oh good, let's go get some surgery. No, that does not happen.
No, that is absolutely not a thing. It was, we had lawyers involved. It was a 2-year process for top surgery. It was hard. It was difficult. It was expensive. It was emotionally draining. It's not something you go into, you know. I mean, it took us a year to get the hormone blockers approved by the insurance company. I mean, there is nothing at all spontaneous about any of this.
Well, not only that. For us, our insurance, we were not lucky ones. Our insurance would not cover top surgery at all.
Mm-hmm.
We paid for the whole damn thing out of our pocket.
Yeah.
And it was still important enough to it's like, no, we're going to do this. My ex-wife paid for half of it. She eventually came around and she's very supportive at this point because once you learn enough, you know, you learn enough and you're like, no, okay, this is who they are. And so she paid for half of it. I paid for half of it. We paid for it out of our pockets. But the problem is that if you eliminate these treatments, this is the standard treatment. There is nothing else that they got for our kids besides this. You know, I mean, I guess you give them enough anti-anxiety medication to make them go nuts or something to
lobotomize them.
This is the standard treatment. I mean, I've got like if you look at the AMA sent all of the governors across the country last year a letter that says lay off these kids.
Yeah.
This is between doctors, parents, and the kid. We don't need the state stepping in between. And it's so weird because you'd think that a small government state that's all for less regulation and our legislature just went through this, right? Like, at what point does the government step between parents and the kids? How about a public healthcare crisis? How about vaccinations? The legislature's like, look, we know this is the smartest, even the Republican legislature, all in all, a Republican governor is like, this is important. We need everybody to get vaccinated. It's the number one way we can fight this pandemic. And at the same time, this is not a place where government should decide for children against a parent's will,
right,
to get vaccinated. And so they gave all the parents the right to refuse the vaccination, even though they believe in it.
Yeah.
And they said, no, parental rights are too important. And yet here's the same guys showing up. The hypocrisy is astounding. And they're saying, no, we can't trust parents with something like this because, you know, they might flippantly decide to give their kid top surgery.
Right.
Like tomorrow. You know, come on. This is insanity. It's so dumb and it's so hypocritical. It just pisses me off.
And we're going to talk about a little bit about what to do to kind of help get ahead of the legislation and the legislators that are doing it. But I just want to go back to an earlier point that you made about one of the most dangerous books ever written by a religious person. And that is Miracle of Forgiveness. That book is insane and old and antediluvian. And yet, you know, I keep running into it in my life. You know, and I haven't been churchy for 35 years. So when the prevailing culture is, and this was the argument that I had with my family a couple Thanksgivings ago, was when the dominant religion calls my child an abomination, I've got more than logic and science as a problem in getting from saving my kid's life to working to make their life livable.
Yeah.
And the legislatures all over the country right now are they've gotten in the way of making their life livable, and now they're walking it back to preventing parents from life-saving measures of medical care. And I can't figure out and have yet to be able to figure out. I thought that it happened last year when we got ahead of the bills and the session ended, you know, only to realize how panicky adults with no common sense can be. And so it comes down to what I've done for bad legislation in the past. And I think that this is a little different. What I've done, you make the phone calls, you call the legislator that's the problem, you call your legislators. You know, you're polite, you don't swear, no matter how hard it is, you know,
it's don't like, call them names, don't threaten them.
Nope. And then
don't raise your voice.
But with us, it seems like there is a further measure that must be given in that we need to show up. We need to testify whenever possible. You know, if your kid is in a stable enough place, you know, make sure that they're there as well so that people can see. You have no idea what we went through with my son, you know?
Yeah.
You have no idea how many years you're just walking this tight edge and the receiving
fear.
Oh, terror. Just terror. And then you get to the end of it, and not the end of it, but you get to a certain point where it's like, we can now manage, we can breathe. I've got the hormone blockers. I think we went along the same track as you just about a year earlier in age with the hormone blockers, getting the gender marker on the birth certificate changed, name change, and then top surgery. Yeah. You know, and that was the order we had to go in.
Yep. Here's the thing that sucks about this whole thing is that I'm not sure that the GOP really cares about this issue as much as they make it out to be.
What?
It's just something that they can piss everybody off and rally around. And they went looking for it when marriage equality happened. And
the 2004 election.
Yeah, when that happened, that no longer was something that they could really piss everybody off about and rally around, and so they've looked for something else, and I think this has kind of been it. I wonder if they are, I mean, you know, it's kind of like they're barking up the wrong tree, but the treatment it versus the sports ban. So we're dealing with two separate things. We're dealing with medical treatment for transgender youth, and then we're dealing with the sports ban over here. And the sports ban is the one where it passed. We fought off the medical treatment one for year after year. And you go, you know, I tell people, the dads and moms and anybody that's family's dealing with this, go talk to your legislator one-on-one. Tell them your story about your family and what you went through and what this has been like, because they need to know that this is just normal families that this happens to, and you're normal people, and you're facing something that they're eliminating tools that you need to make it so your kid stays alive and your family stays intact, as intact as possible. But the sports ban they're like, look, this feels to so many people like an injustice.
Yeah.
Because you've got these big brutish men that are pretending to be women and beating up our little girls. And so they've been able to kind of turn this into this huge rallying cry. And it just happens that, you know, you've got former President Eric Trump, you know, tweeting out transphobic tweets and all this kind of stuff, which wouldn't have happened with, you know, it's so crazy to think. I mean, you remember Mitt Romney's campaign chair was gay.
Yeah.
Yep. And he resigned because he didn't want to hurt him a few months before the election. And Mitt was like, no, don't wait. What are you leaving me now for? Can you even fathom a GOP presidential candidate with a gay campaign chair at this point in history?
Well, no. And you go back to the 2004 anti-marriage equality stuff, you know, all the anti-gay messaging there. And it was Ken Mellman, chair of the RNC, who the next year came out and quit his job after doing all the damage that he did that year. And set everything back. Then he's like, by the way, I'm gay and I can't be a Republican anymore. It's like, you know, your epiphany's a little late, sport.
Well, it's a little crazy because there's too much hypocrisy. I don't know that this is being used. I mean, really, I think they're bringing it up, and I think it's an issue because it's a rallying cry kind of issue. Because it wasn't last year. It was the year before last year. I actually went and I met with Kara Berkland, who ran this bill in Utah, to begin with. And And I met with her before the session, you know, I mean, in December, and I sat down with her and I talked to her about the bill and what the concerns were and stuff. And she's like, well, it's just a safety issue. And I said, Kara, I said, you know, for how many people that this will affect, and considering the fact that the Utah High School Activities Association already has regulation in place that regulates participation in sports of trans kids, what the hell are you doing? There's you can't even find a trans kid that this applies to yet. I'm like, do you know of a situation where a trans kid's played anything? And what's going to happen if you pass this is that this is going to affect negatively more cisgender straight kids than it is trans kids. And it's already happened where you've got something up in Davis County where there's a basketball player that is too good and everybody wants somebody to go check her crotch. And now you got to drop your pants to show that you are really a woman. I mean, it's like, what the hell? You know, I'm like, well, that's got to hurt when you're a kid and somebody's like, you are too masculine and too dominant to have been born female. Now you got to prove that you're a girl. I mean, if you're an athletic woman, kind of butchy woman, and somebody is sitting there saying, prove that you're a woman. I mean, my hell, that hurts. My daughter, if somebody said to her, you are not pretty enough and you're way too masculine to, you're probably a man, that's going to hurt a 17-year-old kid deeply.
That's going to fuck them up.
That's not right.
Yeah.
And she's sitting there going, well, you know, it might happen and we just need to be prepared for when it arises. And I'm like, you know, when you already have regulation in place that handles something like this, then what you do is you write legislation when that regulation fails.
Yeah.
If that regulation fails to keep the fairness in check, then the first thing you do is you go try to deal with, oh, do we need to adjust that? I mean, we've had athletes, transgender athletes have been able to participate in the Olympics.
Yep.
Since 2002. Okay.
Yep.
And last year they modified the rules for participation that more science was done. And lo and behold, they're like, well, if you've got adults that have been on cross sex hormones for, you know, more than 2 years or less than 2 years, then the advantage that they have generated by taking by having testosterone in their body for a while, that takes 2 years to eliminate the advantage instead of 1 year. And so they changed the rules. I'm all for that. That's great because sports are supposed to be fair.
Yeah.
And if science says that it's still not fair, then you adjust it. And if all of that fails, then you pass legislation.
Yeah. That's so the way government's supposed to work, especially in a small government state.
Yeah.
Keep it local. Let it build its way up.
This is salacious.
Yeah.
This is, those trans people are gross. I mean, you know, and this is unfair. It's like, come on, you know, really, you know, and she's like, well, they're so different in size. And I'm like, have you watched a junior high school football game? You know, I mean, you've got kids that are literally double the weight of other kids playing football.
Yeah.
And then I sent her a picture and I think she's passed away now, but there was a WNBA center that she's like 7.5, 8 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this girl trying to guard her that comes up just past her waist. And that's in pro sports. We find, you know, if you compare the smallest NFL player to the largest NFL player, I guarantee you there's a doubling in the size difference between them in tackle football. And it's like, come on, you know, we have ways that we can deal with this that aren't a matter of creating a sports ban.
Needing my kid to take off his pants to satisfy whatever the hell is going on in your skull.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And who gets to be the one that calls for it? It's going to be the parents on the other team that are using it against the kids on this team. It's just, it's out of control. It's a problem. Now, fortunately, most of these things, they even talked about when they talked about the healthcare treatment, the question was asked of, so if you've got a kid who is not transgender and they want to get a breast augmentation or a reduction,
sure,
a breast reduction because their boobs are too big and they can't run on the cross country team. And so they want to reduce their breast size. Is that going to be illegal? And they're like, well, no, it's not going to be illegal. That's okay. Right. Cause that's healthcare treatment. That's treatment for healthcare. That's not turning them from one gender to the other or anything. And maybe they'll change their mind down the road. And so one of the Democrats asked they always have an attorney there that is in charge of, is this going to be a constitutional problem or not? And they're like, well, is allowing a certain type of treatment for straight kids versus transgender kids, is that going to be a problem? And he hummed and hawed about it. But you know what? That's a violation of the equal treatment clause. You can't sit there and say, well, just because you're transgender, you can't have this treatment, and then say everybody else can.
Yeah.
Everybody else could do the same thing, but you might be sad about a breast reduction in your future because you're transgender, and then you change your mind. Now you're not transgender and you wish you had boobs. What the hell? You know, what about the kid that just had a breast reduction so they could run, and later they want to be a dancer and need big boobs? What? Come on. This is it. It is something that is nobody's business. It's nobody's business. And not only that, is that it violations the violation of the parental rights that have occurred here. I mean, we're sitting there saying, yeah, we think people ought to be able to, you know, vaccinations are a public health miracle.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can choose not to. I mean, I personally, I don't think you should be able to choose not to, but this is, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It just makes me shake my head and go, how can you even be saying this? Because it's so hypocritical.
Well, and that's what it is. And half of that is what you can't tell a thin-skinned legislator either, you know? And that's why when we talk about advocacy, when we talk about citizen lobbying, it sucks, but you gotta be nice and you gotta use tender hooks, and you can't call them names, and sometimes even the most accurate description of their behavior gets taken as an insult. When you go, you're an ignorant hypocrite, they're like, well, yeah, but that was rude to say. So,
and I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah. And so that's really what it comes down to, is first we got to communicate, you know, and then the other one is we organize. And so bringing this all back around to the beginning, you know, I get most of my legislative updates on shit that I care about in this particular direction from the Dragon Dad's website, from the Facebook group. So if somebody goes, hey, warning, here's a thing, and we all get a chance to look at it. And that has been a big valuable boom too. But yeah, go ahead.
There's a lot of people that we're talking to out there that are not going to qualify as Dragon Dads. And so we need your help too. And so where can you get that information? Troy Williams, Equality Utah.
Yeah.
Follow Troy Williams and Equality Utah, especially Equality Utah. They will put out a call for help. But what you can do is, if you go to the state legislature's website, find out who your local rep is, find out who your local senator is, and text them and write them and call them. Please, please save kids by doing this. Because, I mean, if this was not available for my kid, I have no idea. But trans kids are 14 times as likely as straight cisgender kids to end their life in suicide.
Yeah.
So why is that? Well, it's dysphoria and it's a lack of social acceptance.
Yeah.
Both of these are problems that passing legislation like this are just going to exacerbate. And so we need to, if I did not have the ability to get my kid on blockers and hormone therapy before they turned 18, I'm not sure that they would be here. I think there's probably odds are pretty strong they wouldn't be.
Yeah, I can guarantee my son would not have been here had we not been able to follow those steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So gender affirming healthcare is insanely important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need your help. We need you if you qualify to be a dragon dad or mama dragon. We would love to have you join us there. Mama dragons are way ahead, so that there's like 8,000 or 9,000 of them.
Yeah.
They're crazy. They're everywhere. But there's about 1,600 of us because we're special. So
nice. We're doing well. Well, dude. Okay. First, thanks for your advocacy. You preach a good word, and I like reading your stuff. Thanks for Dragon Dads, because everything else aside, it's been a lifesaver for me personally. You know,
I'm glad to hear it.
Oh yeah, and thanks for spending a little time with us this week.
Oh, I'm happy to come on and talk about this kind of stuff anytime you need somebody to put their two cents in.
Outstanding. Outstanding, buddy.
This is the month. This is the time.
Yep.
We need your help. The legislative session in Utah is in January. Starts what, next week? I think so.
Yep. Day after Martin Luther King Day.
This is the call to action for all of you out here that are able to reach out to your legislators. Please do it.
Oh, and just my last little bit, repetitive behaviors. Call your representatives, write them, text them once a week, give or take. Let that keep that as a constant. One time's not going to be enough. We're LGBTQ parents are a minority as hell around here, so we need as many voices as possible.
Yeah. We need your help.
Yep.
The kids need your help. Let me put it that way. I mean, my kid's done. We're not having any more kids. Unless I have a grandkid that is LGBT, I'm not going to be faced with another surprise coming down the road in my future. and here I am still doing this. Well, why am I doing this? My kid's going to be 21 this month. I'm still here. I'm still doing it because it's important for the kids coming down the road in the future and the families. That, I mean, this could happen to anybody. I always tell people, be careful who you hate. It could turn out to be someone you love.
Yep.
And this in particular is one of those things where you never know when the gender reveal party before the baby's born or when they're time, don't do those
because
you never know if you're going to have to take it back.
Awesome. So, all right, buddy. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it was great to be on. And I've listened to your program since you were on KSL. You know that? So
I aged the both of us.
I know. A long time ago. And back then, I was a Republican state delegate. And so I was like, well, I agree with that. But no, I don't know. No, I don't. No, I agree with that part. But so it's always been something that's been interesting, regardless of the rest of it.
Outstanding. But, outstanding, brother. Okay. Regardless, thank you guys for listening. We're going to go do Patreon now at patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media. That's also a good way to help us out. with the Patreon, and we appreciate your help when you join us there. A reminder from the beginning of the show, we are running a fundraiser. You can find that at theleftshow.com. Scroll down just a little bit. It's in the top right of the widget stack. It's very pretty. I made it red, white, and blue for you so you wouldn't miss it.
Yeah.
We'd appreciate your help there, not only for the shows that live now, but for the shows I'm going to bring into being once again this year. We can use your help. We really
definitely
can.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anybody got anything else?
No.
I will have something next week that I will announce.
I won't be here.
What?
I'm going to go to that show that I go to every year at the Stanley Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got a new dress. It's all sequiny and beautiful.
Mmm. Tasty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry. We're going to miss you.
I'll miss you guys.
Okay. Well, it's good to know ahead of time. Now we can try and find somebody to fill in.
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry about last week.
No, you're fine. That was a little late, though. That was kind of funny. I was like, oh.
Sorry. All right. It just...
Shit happens.
Yeah.
Trust me. I am not that guy. Oh, look, some shit happened. That is to be expected.
It did.
I am more surprised when everybody shows up than if somebody can't.
Yep. Excrement right, will always occur.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, we got big news coming from JC and the comic book show next week. We've got the fundraiser going for the next week and a half, give or take. Like I said, we could really use your help there. But in the meantime, let's all do what the British lady says.
If you've made it this far, you might as well join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/DFenMedia. This episode and more always available at www.theleftshow.com.